I've read all the books and articles you put out, John. Fascinating stuff. The thing on hyperthermia should save a few lives, I'd say.
That's the idea, Major. By the way, it was nice of you to invite me to your home.
Stranger in a strange land and all that. Couldn't let you sleep on the airport floor. Anyway, I had an ulterior motive.
Oh? And what was your ulterior motive?
As you probably know, John, our services here are looking into quite a number of modern small arms for the military. It made me give some thought to weaponry for our specialized teams in the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. I know survival isn't your only thing. You know weapons, too. Thought I might take advantage of the weather delay of your flight out of here and pry a few opinions from you while I ply you with some whiskey and some of my wife's home cooking.
Ply away.
Your mind is somewhere else, isn't it? That snowstorm canceled flights tonight, but the meteorology people are saying everything will be clear by midday tomorrow. Tonight, just take it easy.
I'm sorry, Major. I'm worried about my family. All this war talk.
Just talk, I think. I hope.
Change the subject. Now, what do you want to know?
Well, when you're not teaching survivalism, but working with counter-terrorist weapons, what do you use?
You mean, which guns do I like best for myself, or which would I recommend for you?
I've read your recommendations on various things more often than I can remember, John, but what about you? What do you use?
Dinner in 1 minute!
Thanks.
All right, short and sweet, then. I can smell dinner. I've got a lot of guns and knives and other stuff, but there are just a few things I really bank on. I always carry these. Stainless steel Detonix 45 with an Alessi shoulder holster. It's the best automatic I know, bar none. That's why I carry two of them everywhere. When you consider the effectiveness of the round they throw, reliability, the concealment characteristics, there's no contest. The stainless steel they use is the best quality. I don't get much time to clean these things, and there isn't a spot of rust or corrosion on either one of them. They work every time, and you can interchange the standard government model magazines, a whole bit.
What else?
What else? Well, when I'm in the field, I've got this metallified 6-inch Python. I had the barrel magna-ported, got a set of 22 long rifle conversion chambers and a barrel liner for it from Harry Owens. It's good for everything that way, from a small bear in a pinch to a squirrel for the pot. Sometimes I use a metallified Colt Lawman Snubby, too, when I want a third gun that I can conceal.
I think you both might want to listen to the radio.
Could you flip it on, honey?
It has been indicated to us by informed sources that the U.S. President and the Soviet Premier have just completed a lengthy conversation and that nothing has been resolved. An anonymous high-ranking Pentagon source indicates that a mobile military unit comprised of personnel from all branches of the U.S. Armed Services, known as U.S. Long Range Strike Force Elements, are at this moment being airlifted toward Pakistan. This force is analogous to our special commandos. Official Washington has been unavailable to confirm or deny this report. We will bring you more bulletins as information becomes available, and we'll have a special report on this crisis immediately.
That's Roger Carrigborn. Met him once. Good guy. One of the best newsmen in this country.
I'm sorry, Major. I've got to get out of here and back to my family.
I think it is a perfectly charming idea, Ambassador Buchner. Everyone had planned so long and hard for the charity ball.
I'm so glad you approve, Madame Colbert.
And we see Russians coming now. Well, heaven knows what the foundling homes here will be forced to cope with.
Yes. Now, if you ladies will allow me, I must confer with some of my associates in the library.
About the world war that's coming, Daddy?
Now, Cheryl, you're being an alarmist, isn't she, Charles?
As you say, Monsieur Ambassador, isn't she?
I have to go, darling. You enjoy the last dance, and remember, our plane leaves at 6 a.m. I suppose we won't be seeing you again, Charles. At least not in the immediate future.
Oh, but you will, Monsieur Ambassador. I am being posted to our embassy in Washington. A promotion.
Oh.
Oui. I knew that this would be pleasing to you. With your lovely daughter's permission, I can go right on seeing her.
Well, with such good news, how can the two of you bear standing here talking with an old man like me? You should be out celebrating. Good evening.
As Bruckner moved along the corridor toward the library, he glanced through one of the picture windows and across the darkened lawns and beyond the other side of the dull bulk of wrought iron fence separating American embassy territory from Pakistan. There were vans and cars on the other side, and he could see lights for news cameras. The reporters had been there for 12 hours, ever since the United States and several of her allies had announced the intention of leaving the Pakistani capital. Official business was being left in the hands of the redoubtable Swiss. Almost bitterly, Bruckner realized he would be forced to say something to the reporters either when he left the embassy in 6 hours, or at the very least, at the airport.
Ambassadors, I hope you gentlemen like cognac. Reinhardt, I know you do.
Oh, no, no. It is my doctor and my wife. She spies on me for him. No liquor. Such a horrible way to live.
I imagine you all know what this is about. I'm sorry we're leaving you with all our troubles, Reinhardt.
That is part of being Swiss.
I'm sure I speak for all my colleagues when I say that our governments will certainly not forget this kindness. On to business, huh?
Arnold, as our chaps assess it, the Russians are, to use your CIA phrase, going full tilt. Will that mean war?
I hope not. But the Russians must be stopped. The President and our State Department are in touch with all the governments involved. The Prime Minister, the French President, the Chancellor. I don't know what will happen, in all honesty.
Will your President commit American forces as he has indicated?
Gentlemen, with the understanding that the answer won't leave this room, then yes. Some of our rapid deployment forces are already preparing to take off from Egypt. All they need is the word.
There's a time deadline, actually, isn't there, Arnold?
True. Less than a day now.
Where did it all go wrong, mes amis?
Where did what go wrong, Serge?
We are all logical men. The Russians are too. And suddenly the end of humanity is upon us.
Really, Serge? All this rubbish about the end of humanity, really?
I fear Serge may be right. I will take a glass of cognac after all.
Attention. This is Captain Wilmer. As we prepare to get underway, let's just pretend we already did a shakedown run and we'll all rest easily. The electric boat fixers here wouldn't let us down. We'll be diving shortly, and XO Billings tells me the water's fine. Anything you need to know, I'll keep you posted. Wilmer out. All right, Mr. Billings. I know you hate it when I say it, but you knew I was gonna. The USS Benjamin Franklin's all yours. Take her down, Pete.
Aye, sir. Prepare for negative buoyancy. All ahead 1/4. Check the trim on the starboard diving planes, Mr. Smith. Let's get those tanks going. Blow number 2 and number 4. All right, blow 1 and 3. Secure, Captain.
Good work, Billings. I'll be in my cabin for a minute. Sound the alarm if you need me.
Aye, sir.
Wilmer walked past the smaller compartment where he slept and straight toward his desk at the far end of the main cabin. He tossed his baseball cap on the small easy chair, walked around behind the desk and sat down, snatching a thumbnail full of Copenhagen tobacco and slipping it into the pouch in his left cheek. He glanced at the photo of his wife and 2 daughters on his desk. Fishing in his trouser pocket for his keys, he found the right one. He opened the large false drawer at the bottom of the right pedestal of the desk. He twirled the combination on the small safe there, opened the fireproof door, and reached inside, past his log, for the envelope he'd been given. At the very bottom, he found it, emblazoned in red with Top Secret in capital letters. Inside was a smaller white envelope. On the letterhead from the Chief of Naval Operations was printed a single word, Morningstar.
Wonderful.
Wilmer reached all the way into the back of the safe and worked the combination for access to the interior compartment. Tucked inside was a packet of bulging envelopes, each with a code word printed in the upper left-hand corner and stamped again across the closure flap, just as a precaution, he'd been told, that in haste someone didn't open the wrong orders.
Let's see. Hippodrome, Indiana, Igloo, Poker, Barricade, Morningstar.
The coordinates in the first paragraph startled Wilmer. Using the old Perry route past Baffin Bay in Greenland, he'd intersect the Nautilus Polar Exploration route, the same route Byrd had used in part, bypassing Franz Josef Land. Then he'd strike out across the Barents Sea toward the Canaan Peninsula. His target lay 67 degrees north, 31 degrees east, near Murmansk on the Kola Peninsula. The ice pack would be above the Ben Franklin until she was halfway out of the Barents Sea. There were submarine pens near Murmansk and Archangel, and these were his targets.
Fantastic.
Captain?
Wilmer here. What is it, Pete?
Probably nothing much, sir, but the Russians sure have got a whole hell of a lot more trawlers out here than usual.
Figures, Pete. Don't get into a fender bender with the con. I'll be along in a minute or so. Keep me posted if you need to. Wilmer out. Trawlers.
Wilmer could never figure out why the Soviet Navy still relied so heavily on trawlers. Their satellite tracking was just as good as its American counterpart, or was supposed to be, and subs could be tracked by infrared from space a lot more accurately than sonar from the ocean surface. Putting the keys back in his pocket, Wilmer reached reluctantly into the bottom drawer on the other side of the desk. His 1911 A1, slightly oily to the touch, was there, next to its shoulder holster. Standing up, he slipped the harness over his head and left shoulder and settled the strap across his chest. Wilmer had never liked guns, felt uncomfortable wearing one, and doubted that if he ever needed to use the pistol, he could hit anything with it after all these years.
Attention all hands. This is the captain. We are now officially on alert. Section chiefs, report to your stations. All officers, meet with me on the bridge in 10 minutes. We'll be going under the ice on this run, coming up near the Soviet mainland. We are not on a war footing. I repeat, not a war footing. So take it easy. Wilmer out.
Wilmer had been awakened by a crewman just 2.5 hours after he'd gotten into bed. Even back in the action on the bridge, the captain had to shake the sleep from his head. After 18 hours on duty, he'd taken a sleeping pill and gone to bed after his meeting with his officers. It was the only way to turn off from the stress, but it always left him groggy on the other end.
What's our status, Pete?
We're under the ice pack, sir.
You get any sleep?
No, sir. Figured I would after we got under the ice.
You're lucky. I can never sleep worth a damn under the ice. I think I'm claustrophobic, or getting that way after all these years. Hell of a thing for a submariner, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Got the whatchamacallit all revved up, Henderson?
Upward sonar is up and running, sir. Estimated ice thickness is 6 to 12 inches.
Sounds good. What is that, Billings?
Sir, we have a blip, approximately 500 off the starboard bow plane.
500 what, man? Sing it out.
Make that 500, 475 yards now, sir.
Let me take a look at your screen.
Russian, Captain?
Unless we got submarines they haven't told me about. Yeah, it's Russian, all right. Looks like this is kind of a busy street, huh?
Captain, I'm picking up something. I can't be sure what it is.
Let me hear. Did a pinch on sonar once, a long time ago. Billings, load up number 1 and 2 with conventionals and ready number 3 with... Damn it, that was a torpedo being launched. Sound the alarm.
Aye, sir. Captain, we've got it on the scope. Coming right at...
Zero deviant blocks in one minute.
Mikhail Vorovoy watched the entire firing complex from the steel-railed mezzanine with a sense of satisfaction that was evident in his smile. Vorovoy could already see in his mind's eye the Army drone aircraft being set free on autopilot miles away toward the upper atmosphere, and the warheadless missiles being launched from the Ukraine uncounted miles away.
How do you feel, Mikhail? Your first test on multiple targets, and both missiles and planes. You should be proud, Mikhail.
Elisabetta, you know what this means. If my particle beam weapon passes this test, soon it will be operational, and then nuclear war will have become obsolete. Its threat will not hang over us anymore like a plague waiting to break. In just a few years, it will be these weapons that both our country and the Americans will rely upon. No more radiation. No mass murder.
You still see this as a road to peace, Mikhail. I know that.
3, 2, 1. Mark. Switch on.
Peace. It is at hand, Elizabeth. I must go down on the floor and fire the beam personally. I must.
Water. Full power. Booster number 3.
Here. Go. Move aside.
Boosting authorization 12 points.
Sir, we have visuals on the rockets on screen 3.
Excellent. Capacitance function readout.
10 to the 15th capacitance, to the 16th, 17th, 10 to the 18th.
Hold at 10 to the 18th.
10 to the 18th and holding capacitance 0 flux.
Designating targets now. Grid 83, target alpha. Grid 19, target beta. Grid 48, correction. 49, target gamma. Grid 27, target beta. Lock. Targets alpha and beta. Automatic target acquisition and destruction on my mark. 6, 5, 4, 3. Ready? 1. Mark.
Gaggets, 4, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1,
holding at 10 to the 18. Automatic target acquisition and destruction of my mark. 6, 5, 4, 3. Ready? 1.
Oh, Mikhail! We've done it! You've done it!
We have entered the new age! The age of peace!
As you were, gentlemen.
Admiral Corbin, sir.
Yes, Commander Abramson.
We've just had confirmation, sir, that a large-scale...
I know, Commander. I'm the one who confirmed it. All right, gentlemen, let's get this thing underway. I'm due at the White House in 15 minutes. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission just confirmed what our own satellite infrareds and other sensing devices already showed. A large-sized nuclear device was exploded just a few miles beyond the estimated perimeter of the polar ice cap, just about where the Benjamin Franklin's position should have been, according to its last radio beacon relay via satellite. Also, there's a Soviet sub. What the hell's the name of that, Commander?
The Volga, sir. It's a Potemkin-class nuclear sub.
Right, the Potemkin. The Volga. Well, it's off our tracking plots and missing. Could have been a collision, could have been the Russians attacking. There's no way to confirm it without pulling another sub off position and going in to take a look. Can't do that now. I'll officially label it as a nuclear accident, a collision, confer with the Russians, what have you. But my personal assessment, and it's just a gut-level reaction, is that one of them lost their nerve and opened fire, then the other one returned. I knew Wilmer, commander of the Franklin. A little bit edgy about his job, but a good man. He wouldn't have opened fire first. I bet on the Rusky commander. Intelligence put him down as a David Antonievich Kosnayevsky. Kind of a new man on his first line command. Could be the sort of thing a guy like that would do. They're on alert status, too.
Sir, what force was...
I know your questions before you ask them. Tell me if I'm wrong. About 70 megatons. Means at least one of the reactors went up along with nearly all the warheads on both boats. U.S. Geological Survey, our own people, Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration people, nobody knows what's going to happen. Should hike the tides, might lose a lot of ice into the shipping lanes, and could make some minor short-term climatic changes. Not too much crap in the atmosphere, as best as we can tell at this time. That answer your question, Lieutenant?
Yes, sir.
That's all for now. We'll give updates as necessary and take action as called for. Dismissed.
At times like this, Thurston Potter realized he painfully felt his 28 years. Two PhDs didn't make any difference to the Pentagon people or to most of the rest of the inner circle of presidential advisors. Potter looked at his watch. In 25 minutes, he had a press briefing, and by then had to brief all the men assembled in the conference room and get everyone straight on the stories for the media people.
All right, guys. All right. Take off your coats. The president's on the hotline with the Soviet premier. Told me to get the briefing started.
Thurston, what the hell do I hear about the Navy blowing up a submarine?
The Navy didn't blow up a submarine, Mr. Secretary, gentlemen. They happened to meet a Soviet submarine. Our USS Benjamin Franklin apparently came in close proximity of the Soviet craft Volga. Now, the Volga is one of their top-of-the-line boats. We don't know for certain whether they collided or fired on one another. I think we should agree officially on a collision story, at least for the press, at least for today. If we say that in light of the current information, we may consider it a collision, we'll be safe in case the facts contradict us later. Now also, we might be able to use the tragic deaths of several hundred U.S. and Soviet seamen as a tool toward calming things down on the Pakistani question, and we need that. The radiation from the explosion would measure at the same as about a 60 or 70 megaton bomb, and shouldn't pose much of a health problem. There should be some tidal aberrations. Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is drawing up something for the press on that now. But basically, it looks okay. Any questions so far? Now, to bring you up to date on the Pakistani situation. Our embassy people should be flying out of there just about now, along with French, British, and West German diplomats. Others may be with them. It's a little after 6 a.m. their time. Now, there's about 18 hours left on the president's deadline for troop commitments against the Soviets. We're not planning anything terribly major, some rapid deployment strike force personnel working in conjunction with Pakistani forces. What we are doing is honoring our defense treaty with Pakistan and showing the Russians that we mean business. Now, it would take at least 72 hours to position a sizable force over there. I'm talking about a force that could pose major opposition to the existing Soviet ground forces, and we're on alert for that. Admiral Corbin's people indicate the Soviets aren't building up terribly in the Persian Gulf, but we are. However, we are not doing so at such a degree as to force them beyond their present strength.
So what the hell are we doing then?
Well, Mr. Secretary, the important thing right now isn't so much what we or the Russians are doing. That's pretty much following the patterns both nations expected at this juncture. India's position has become the important variable, and a possibly dangerous one right now. Now, how many of you are familiar with the Indian ultimatum? Okay, basically, the Indian government sent a communique to the US, the Soviets, and the Pakistanis. All were identical. If the Russians haven't begun a withdrawal to beyond the Khyber Pass by the deadline that the president set, India will introduce troops into Pakistan to secure Pakistani borders. Now, they believe that the Soviet presence there poses a threat to Indian internal security. Now, we asked the Indians, both formally and informally, to hold off on that. The premier said she wouldn't. The Russians sent a copy of their note to us unofficially. They told her that they had no designs on Indian territory. Unofficially, we told her that we agreed with the Russians and that in this instance they were telling her the truth. All India did was to respond with a second note, an addendum to their original ultimatum. In essence, it said not to forget India's nuclear capabilities and that were the situation to warrant nuclear intervention, it wouldn't be ruled out. The People's Republic of China, which, as you all realize, has remained silent throughout this entire unfortunate situation, has informed the Soviet premier that if need be, China is prepared to side openly with India and support U.S. policy in Pakistan, and should such become necessary, with military aid. Langley, the CIA people there, they say the Chinese are massing troops on the Soviet border already.
Can't your driver make this thing move any faster, Major?
You lived on the Atlantic seaboard too long, John. You Southerners aren't used to snow delays.
Yeah, maybe you're right. How far are we from the airport?
Masterson, what's your guess on time and distance to the terminal?
Time, sir? At least an hour and a half. And the terminal is right out there, sir, less than a mile away.
Masterson, what's that open area like? I mean, would it be heavily drifted? How high if it is?
Shouldn't say more than a foot at the most, Mr. Rourke. I make runs out here quite a bit for gentlemen such as yourself. Never took particular notice of the ground, but it should be pretty level, grassy in the summertime.
Thanks.
You're not thinking of walking from here to the terminal?
Why not?
Well, the snow. The cold out there. You want to get to the flight you're scheduled for in one piece.
I want to get home, Major. That's my big concern right now, and sitting here for another hour or more isn't going to do that. Now, maybe my flight can't get off the ground in this storm. I don't know. But we both listened to that radio. A couple of minutes ago, we both heard about those two submarines colliding. What if that wasn't a collision? What if the reports were lies? That those were missile exchanges that caused the explosion under the ice pack? What about that ultimatum by India and that unconfirmed report that China plans to side with us against the Soviets?
But surely you don't think that we're about to undergo a nuclear
Major,
attack?
Major, I've got a wife, a son, and a daughter. I've got a survival retreat that just might save their lives if we got into a world war. But right now, my wife Sarah doesn't even know how to find the place. I've checked it all very carefully. If the Russians go after big targets, the section of northeast Georgia where my farm is should be safe from direct hits. Residual fallout should be light there. You can check airflow charts yourself and confirm that. But I'm still gonna have to get them out of there pretty fast or else it'll all be for nothing. I'm no good to anyone just sitting here. If I were you, I'd have Masterson there turn this thing around, grab your families, and get the hell out of the urban area. You might be sitting within the 10-mile radius of Ground Zero right now. Is the trunk unlocked, Major?
Corporal Masterson, help Mr. Rourke. You really think it's gonna happen, John? War, I mean.
Yes, I do. I hope we'll see each other again sometime, Major. Traffic is stopped! I'm not blocking anyone! Give me a minute! Thanks, Masterson.
Hey! What are you doing, Mac?
Who, me?
You're the only fool standing around out here getting your grip out of a damned Mercedes! Yeah! I'm talking to you!
I just wanted to be sure. Masterson, good luck.
And to you, sir.
You too, Major.
You're really going to walk over there? Across that?
No. I figure that even with the luggage and all, I can still jog it over there. Except when the snow drifts get deep. I'll be seeing you.
Rourke boosted his large flight bag and threaded his way across the next lane of traffic and onto the shoulder toward the guardrail. There was, as best he could make out with the snow cover, a sloping drop of about 15 feet to the ground level below. He squinted against the glare of headlights and the blowing snow. Across the open space, he could make out the edge of a parking lot. Beyond it was what looked like a hotel, and beyond that, the nearest of the airport terminals. He dropped his flight bag over the guardrail.
Not too deep. Should have written it down.
Rourke turned and looked back up the embankment. He could see Masterson and the RCMP inspector still watching him from the car. He gave them a final wave. Rourke's trouser legs were soaked and plastered cold against his skin, but mercifully, no snow entered his cowboy boots. As he neared the edge of the snow, he spotted a fence, with snow piled on the other side, apparently from plowing. This separated the field from a parking lot.
Need a lift?
No, thanks. Good night for a walk.
You're an American, eh?
Yeah, I'm American. Terminal's not too far away now, half a mile. Probably faster on foot anyway. Thanks, though.
Suit yourself.
Yes, Betty.
Mr. President, I have the Premier on the line. Shall I put him through?
Go ahead. This is the President.
So, we talk again, Mr. President. I, too, prefer the voice link rather than the standard hotline. Now, what troubles you?
Mr. Premier, you are right. We have talked a great deal in these last few hours. I'm happy we are of like minds regarding the voice link. When this crisis has passed, as I know that it will, I look forward to the voice link as a means of broadening the dialogue between your desk and mine.
Mr. President?
Yes, Mr. Premier.
I think you are about to remind me that less than 6 hours remain before you introduce troops into the Pakistan affair. And you wish to inquire if I personally know about the unfortunate situation between your Benjamin Franklin undersea boat and the Volga. I do. And I know your deadline, too.
Sir, Ambassador Stromberg and I had a long talk when he was here not long ago. I asked him his personal assessment of you as a person. You might be surprised to learn how highly he speaks of you.
You have a good man in Ambassador Stromberg. I would like to hire him from you, but we do not agree politically.
I don't agree politically with all of my ambassadors all the time either, Mr. Premier. But the point I'm trying to make is that he says you're a man of goodwill. Well, so am I, sir. I want us to settle this thing here and now if we can. I think we can both agree that we're pushing things a little far this time. Those men aboard your submarine and ours, regardless of how it happened, let's let their deaths become a bond between our peoples. Let's learn from that tragedy to avoid an even greater tragedy. Do you agree, sir, that we should do that?
In principle, of course I agree. But coming from principle into fact must be our goal. I would be a madman if I wished to have our two nations linger on the brink of war. But there are other variables, ones which you either wish to ignore or about which you are sincerely poorly informed.
Those are, sir?
Our particle beam weapon. We have ringed Moscow with these. We have just completed a test to eradicate the one major shortcoming of the system. We have tested it against varying altitude high-speed targets in multiple sequence. 4 targets, Mr. President. All of them vaporized. This is perhaps something I should maintain as secret information, but I choose to reveal it in good faith.
No disrespect intended, Mr. Premier, but your system would be useless against multiple re-entry vehicles. You must know that. We have our sources.
We have our sources too, Mr. President. We know what is necessary about your MRVs. We can defeat them. I have, though, no desire to see which of us is correct. You must see that.
I see, sir, that you must realize we are not bluffing. I have already taken steps, which your own intelligence can verify, to interject our tactical response forces at the time the deadline comes about. I have also placed all American forces on alert, prepared for massive intervention in the Pakistan area should Soviet troops not withdraw.
Then we are like two young fellows trying to prove themselves over a young woman. We will push at each other, brandish our fists, give the angry glances, and see who backs down or fights. The Soviet Union will not back away. I had entertained the hope that your ambassador could convince you of the sincere motivations for our move into Pakistan. Evidently, you chose to ignore these. My hands are tied, Mr. President. I will not be the first to start a war, if that gives you any comfort, nor will I immediately react with Soviet nuclear forces if your American troops do indeed move into Pakistan. But if Soviet lives are threatened, then I must take whatever action conscience dictates as necessary. Please call me again if there is some new development. I shall do the same. This conversation is almost over, I think.
Yes. Yes. I'll keep in contact with you, sir.
There is one more thing, Mr. President.
Yes, Mr. Premier.
I wish to make a demonstration. We are using, if I understand correctly, the primary satellite for our talk. The others are still operative?
Yes, but I fail to see what you're driving at, sir.
The voice you will hear on the line is a technician. He cannot hear our conversation, though we can hear him. Do not be alarmed. This is a mere test.
Yes, yes. Девять, восемь, семь, шесть, пять, четыре.
Mr. Premier, what kind of a test?
Раз.
What's going on? Mr. Premier, I demand... Yes, what is it, Betty?
I have the Premier on the line again.
Put him through. Yes.
Now you have seen the force of our particle beam weapon. We will reimburse your country for the satellite if you feel that will mitigate any tension resulting from this demonstration. But please, check with your communications and electronics intelligence personnel. The satellite was vaporized by a high-frequency particle beam.
That proves nothing!
That is sad. I had hoped that it would.
Betty!
Yes, Mr. President?
Get Dmitry Antonaeus over at DARPA.
Sir, he's already on line six.
Put him on now. Dmitry.
Mr. President.
Dmitry, did they really destroy one of our satellites?
Yes, Mr. President. The Converse 1 was vaporized. The time of destruction was precisely...
Never mind that. Get over here immediately. I'm gonna need you. Some sort of policeman, are you?
What?
I asked if you were some sort of policeman.
No.
I saw you back in the terminal, so covered with snow, looked almost like you'd walked.
I did walk. What's so funny?
Well, I saw you back there with the aluminum cases and all. I'm a shooter myself, you know. Gun cases, weren't they?
So what?
Well, not just anybody can take guns in and out of Canada. Rifles, yes, but not handguns. And that was what you had in that smaller case, wasn't it?
I was up here doing some teaching with the Mounties. I brought the guns along for a short thing with one of their special units.
So, I'm going to Atlanta on business. How about you?
I have a place down there and a farm in the northeast part of the state. So I'm going home.
Oh. Well, I won't be home for 2 weeks. Things to do, a living to make, and all that.
Uh-huh. Oh, that sounds fascinating.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Captain Stewart speaking. We're sorry for the delay caused by the snow, but it looks like we're finally going to be getting off the ground in just another few minutes. I've just been in radio contact with the tower, and we're fifth in line for takeoff from runway 4. Weather reports from our flight south show gradual clearing, and once we're over the Great Lakes area heading down toward the Smoky Mountains, the weather conditions are much more moderate. Atlanta's Hartsfield Airport, our destination, shows clear conditions, present temperatures in the high 40s with a morning low of 45 degrees. With clear skies and a daytime high temperature of 58 degrees by afternoon. Since we'll be getting underway shortly, if you have loosened or unfastened your seat belts, we ask that at this time you check that they are securely fastened. Also, please ensure that all trays and seats are in their upright and locked position. Should you have any questions now or later, please check with the flight crew as they pass by. We appreciate your patience, and management tells me that because of the delays here, cocktails will be complimentary for this trip once we're airborne. On behalf of the flight crew, my co-pilot, Captain McKenzie, and myself, I welcome you aboard. Please enjoy your flight, and thanks for traveling with us.
Rourke stared back at the window, automatically tugging at his seatbelt. He realized almost bitterly that if the war came, his lifelong battle of nerves with his wife would be ended. His position would be vindicated. A smile crossed his lips as he remembered something someone had said about the bitter taste of victory. He would have rather lived a lifetime in peace, his time and money invested in survival equipment, and the retreat itself having been all a part of being foolishly overprepared.
You know, I've spent a lot of time analyzing world affairs.
What? I'm sorry?
I said I've spent a long time analyzing world events. I prepared for this, read everything I could get my hands on, got survival training.
What?
I knew this was coming.
What was coming?
Have you been listening to the news, the radio?
What? Oh, all the war talk? Just saber-rattling, my friend. I wouldn't worry over it, not a bit.
Oh, you wouldn't, huh? Well, I was just going to suggest that maybe you get off this damn plane and go home and take care of your family just in case it isn't all talk.
You really did walk through the snow just to get aboard. My God, fella, you take this Russian stuff dreadfully seriously, don't you?
Yeah, I guess I do.
There's another communique from the Indian government, Mr. President. Just came in over the telex.
Read it to me, Thurston.
All right, sir. It begins by saying that the Indian government...
Just the essentials.
Yes, sir. They say that at the expiration of your deadline, they'll utilize a low-yield nuclear device tactically. It's mostly as a symbolic statement of their entrance into the conflict with the Soviets and their intention to resist their incursion into Pakistan at all costs.
That's crazy. Get me the Indian ambassador right away.
Immediately, sir.
Bernie, what do you think?
I think you should get out of here and head somewhere we can count on your being alive long enough to direct the war effort, Mr. President. If India uses a nuclear device, maybe we can still avoid a war. Pakistan, though, might be tempted then. I understand they had them ready. No really effective delivery system, though. But that could start it. What if another pair of submarines collides or attacks each other? What does Mr. Antonia say about the Soviet particle beam systems?
Dmitry says they could be operational, but that the destruction of the communication satellite was just a planned shot. Could have been working it out for hours in advance and probably were. It won't be any match for our MRVs. Still, I don't want to get that far, and I don't think the Premier wants that either.
Are we going to back down then?
I'm going to call the Premier again. Maybe we can work out a compromise. In the meantime, I'll have my special plane called up just in case I want to get over to the mountain.
Good move, Mr. President. If those suckers want to play poker, well, then let's play.
You are sure of this, Gosboja?
Our intelligence realized the importance of this, Comrade Premier. It has been investigated and investigated again. There can be no doubt.
You have been a major with intelligence for long, Gosboja?
Yes, Comrade Premier.
How nice for you. So, the Pakistani army has a nuclear device and will destroy a dam lying in the path of our forces. Has anyone bothered yet to inform the Pakistanis that this will force the possibility of total war?
No, Comrade Premier. Or at least, I have not been so informed.
Well. The American president just tried calling me, but I was unavailable. He left word he would try again from his hardened mountain retreat, his bomb shelter. I suppose that I, too, should fly to my bomb shelter. He can reach me there. You are a credit to your gender, Comrade Major. Please advise my staff that I instructed you to avail yourself of some refreshment on your way out.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, I wish the emergency meeting of the Politburo advisors, my science advisors, and other members of my senior staff to begin in 5 minutes. Alert the helicopter pilot that I shall be needing his services shortly, and make all other necessary arrangements.
Aboard his helicopter, flying through the night, the Soviet Premier shone a small pen light onto the sheet of yellow paper he held in his left hand. On the yellow paper, he had written several items, all of which he had discussed with his Politburo advisors, his science team, the military staff, all in a very brief time before he had boarded the helicopter. Item one had been the particle beam weapon. He did not trust it, neither did the military. Only the fanatic young scientist was convinced and had pleaded that it would mean an end to nuclear war. the Premier had decided he could not trust the weapon to bring down the American ICBMs, especially those with multiple re-entry vehicles, multiple warheads. He would gamble on launching Soviet missiles if the Indians or Pakistanis struck with nuclear weapons first. Item 2 had been the Chinese. This had forced the nuclear option and had amended Item 1. He had felt compelled to attack the United States first, for the Chinese would surely attack if the Indians or Pakistanis used a nuclear device, and intelligence indicated that the Pakistanis were ready to do so within the hour to stop the Soviet advance. The sad thing, the Premier thought, was that he had already ordered the advance stopped. His troops had secured the territory they had originally intended to take, and there was no need for a further advance. Item 3. He could see the words, even in the total darkness. The first missile would launch in approximately 15 minutes, just as he reached his shelter.
How many dead?
Mommy, 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 mommy!
Shh, Anne. Mommy's going to watch her show now.
Mommy, I want to sit next to you.
fine, come on. Shh, shh.
This is a special report. The following is a message recorded just minutes ago in the Oval Office. The President of the United States.
Mom? Why is he on? Shh. Let me hear this.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. If you are now hearing this message, it is because something of vital concern to the American people has just taken place. We are all aware of the heightening world tensions in these past few days and weeks, these past few hours. It would appear now that the possibility exists of Soviet military action to some degree or another against the United States. If you are now hearing this message, it simply means that we have elected to take the precautionary action of placing you, the American people, on alert to this possibility. It does not mean that war has been declared or that attack is imminent. It does mean that it would be prudent to tune to your local civil defense channels and proceed according to their directions.
Mommy!
Quiet, please.
The American people have endured many hardships over the past in the defense of liberty. And their response has been one in which future generations of Americans have always taken great pride. Let whatever events transpire be so recorded as well. And let us pray that these few simple precautions be required for only a brief period. By keeping tuned to either 6:40 a.m. or 12:40 a.m., by following the simple advice broadcast by Civil Defense, we shall all endure the events which are taking shape in as peaceful and secure a manner as conditions allow. I am ordering, for the protection of all Americans, that martial law be placed in effect in areas of high population density, that all sales of liquor, firearms, ammunition, explosives, and other controlled substances, with the exception of medication, be curtailed. To heighten the effectiveness of civil defense measures.
Come here, children. Maybe Daddy's plane has landed already.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Captain Stewart speaking. I don't quite know how to say this, but according to Atlanta Tower, for reasons of national security, our flight and other flights stacked currently at the field are being diverted inland. I'll ask that you check your seat belts once again. We'll be moving out of the holding pattern here and taking a new flight plan. Our projected landing is Phoenix, Arizona. I want to apologize on behalf of Can American Airlines for any inconvenience this may cause you, but also assure you that transportation into the Atlanta area will be arranged as soon as possible, and accommodations will be provided for you in the Phoenix area. The reason behind this rerouting, as it's been reported to us, is a currently unsubstantiated report that the Soviet Union and the United States, 15 minutes ago, officially broke off diplomatic relations.
Excuse me, sir. Please buckle your seatbelt, okay?
Mm-hmm. What's going on?
Sir, I really can't add any more to what the captain has said.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Captain Stewart again. I'm picking up something cutting across our frequency with the Atlanta Tower. It indicates that Civil Defense is alerting the Atlanta area that approximately 15 minutes ago, satellites indicated a massive Soviet intercontinental ballistic missile launch against the U.S. mainland and Western Europe.
The Russians have finally done it! No!
Everyone shut the hell up! This woman is having a heart attack! What's your excuse?
Are you a doctor?
Ma'am? Ma'am, can you hear me? Damn, she's got no pulse.
Everyone, please return to your seats. We have the problem under control.
You can't control Russian ICBM!
I mean this problem. Please sit down.
Ma'am, does anybody know her name?
My passenger list says her first name is Maya.
Maya, can you hear me?
You did it! She's alive!
Try to make her comfortable. Keep her mouth clear. Have one of the passengers watch her to make sure her chest is rising and falling. And tell the captain to set us down as soon as he can. This lady needs a hospital.
I can give her oxygen.
Save that for when she needs it. She's breathing okay for the moment.
She would have been dead if it weren't for you.
I just did what I could.
The president and Thurston Potter raced across the White House lawn toward the special short takeoff and landing Osprey aircraft, which the president had ridden only once before during a civil defense exercise. It was nicknamed the Doomsday Plane and was authorized to carry the president and his advisor, the pilot, co-pilot, and one more passenger, Air Force Sergeant Harold Doherty, the Air Force NCO who accompanied the president everywhere he went. A small black rectangular case was in the sergeant's hand and, as always, handcuffed to his wrist. Inside the case was a small radio telephone unit. Its battery was charged once a day and the leads checked at least that often. Using the communications device, the president could give the coded verbal attack order for a massive nuclear launch. The president had been told about the Soviet launch, but had not used the box yet.
Are you going to use the box, Mr. President?
Not yet. There's still a chance. Not yet. We'll be at the mountain in less than 10 minutes. I've got a call going out to the Soviet premier at that time.
Sir, none of us wants this, but some of their submarine-based missiles could be re-entering the atmosphere by now.
What the hell's going on?
This is Major Hornsby, Mr. President. My radar just picked up a missile, a big one it looks like, coming out of the east on a trajectory that will take it into the center of Washington.
Harry, give me the box now. God have mercy on us all, gentlemen.
Shh, shh. It'll be okay. I know you don't like the cellar. Michael, go clear out the corner under the workbench. I'm just gonna set down the radio.
Mommy, what's going on? I'm scared.
Shh. It'll be all right. Just do as I say.
Mommy?
Michael, Anne, listen. I'm not going to say this is a game. This is very serious. I'm going to pull the mattress up in front of us, then we're going to pull the blanket up over our heads. That's in case some damage should be done to the house. But we're almost 70 miles from Atlanta, and I don't think the damage will go this far. Now remember, keep under the blanket and the mattress. There might be a very bright light that could burn us, but it'll go away after a few seconds. That's what the radio announcer said. There might be a very strong wind. That's why we're down here in the cellar, just in case some of the windows get blown in. And there may be a really loud noise. So when I put my arms around you, I want each of you to put your hands over your ears and keep your mouths open, okay?
We'll be all right, Mommy. I'll take care of you and Annie.
I know you will, big boy. Now give me a hand with the mattress and blanket. Okay. Now cover your ears. Children, I think it's passed.
Can we get up?
I think maybe we can get out from under the table now. Shh. Shh. It'll be all right. Daddy will be here soon. Daddy will be here.